daydreaming about dragons. Noticed something in a game I ran this Sunday night. It was a fun game. It was a successful game, but I noticed a pattern. And while I was doing it, I was like, man, this seems familiar. I do this a lot. So that's interesting to me. And I think I need to, when you see a pattern, when I see a pattern like that, it makes me want to look at it and think about it and think about why I do it, what I'm doing, you know, and do it. How can I mix it up so that it doesn't feel like the same thing every time? And not only to, you know, because I don't want to bore my players and my friends, but also I don't want to bore me. I don't want to be like, oh, here we go. Let's do this again. So before I break up this pattern, let's talk about what the actual pattern is. It's usually a game with around three people. And for the sake of this example, let's use that. I've got three people. Sometimes it's new characters or in a new game, and sometimes it's not. I think I do this on my Thursday night game pretty often too. And I have introduced something that the players want to know more about. It could be a problem that they have to get around. It could be a place they want to infiltrate. It could be a person they want to, you know, or a monster. It could be a lot of things. In this case, it was a ship, a pirate ship that they were going to repossess, right? They were going to snag it back from the pirates. It was an old Earth-made battleship. Cool. So I say, you know, how do you want to learn more about it? You know, what do you want to do? And we go around the table and everybody kind of tells me what their character, based on their skills, based on the character, based on their vibe, they tell me what they're going to do. And it's usually good stuff. And then we go with each character and I go one at a time and they tell me what they're doing. I describe how it's going. You know, maybe we do a little role playing and then we make a roll. Sometimes we make a roll right off the bat to see how it went. And then we play it off of that. So yeah. And then we go around and then we all come back and share what we learned and we go from there. And the thing is, when people come back together, that's when the magic starts happening. That's when things get interesting, is when everyone gets back together, they've got each other's information, and now go. And it doesn't always go like that. Sometimes a role goes really poorly, so there's a conflict. Sometimes, you know, someone gets drawn in deeper than they thought they were going to because they messed up or they stumbled into something or you know, it doesn't always go smoothly, but most often we go around the table, we make a few rolls, the rolls are meaningful, and we come back, share info, and then, you know, attack the problem based on that information. So how can we break this pattern up, right? I think there are a lot of ways. So here are a few ideas. Something I've been thinking a lot about is handing out information and having the players roll to learn information. And I'm not sure how I feel. So I don't want to hide information behind a roll. So in this particular case, the players were looking at a pirate ship that they were going to repossess. And the roles were really about, do they alert the pirates that someone is coming after them, right? That is really what the roles were about stealth and alerting more than what do you learn? Because I want them to have information, right? Players and characters do better. I don't say do better. No. Here's the sentence. Okay. Players can make more interesting choices with more information. That's it. I did not make that up. I did not invent that by any stretch of the imagination. It's something that I think I've always known, and I've definitely noticed it more in the OSR community, where they don't want to hide information, particularly behind roles. And so that's where I'm noticing it. And I want them to get that information, but I also want to know how tense are these pirates? You know, if this was Blades in the Dark game, I would have a clock set. So when you fail to roll, tick, 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 there's a few ticks of the clock, and maybe the pirates might, you know, if we get to this, if we get to 12 or we get to whatever, then the pirates will learn that someone is after them. But I'm not hiding the information behind the roles. I am creating I am figuring out what the tension of everything is going to be behind the roles. Okay. So how do I break this pattern up? I think there are a couple different ways. I think we can say, hey, I want you all to have this information, but we could just say it, right? I could say just what I said. I want to know how alert these pirates are going to be that someone's after them. So let's make a couple of quick rolls. I'll tell you a couple of quick bits of information, and then we'll just get right back to it. What is the problem with that? All right, so here's my problem with that, is that I also want to use that opportunity and that first batch of roles and the first thing where the players are going out into the world and acting, I want to use it to establish things about the setting. I want the characters to know, right? And there were little things I dropped in the setting. Like at one point, my friend Jay's character walked up to a couple of guards on the dock who were guarding the pirate ship, and they had semi-automatic weapons. And I was like, yeah, the weapons have tags that let you know that the docking authority has said that they're legal to carry, right? And now he knows something more about the firearms laws in this science fiction, you know, space station. You know, guns that are legal will have a space station tag on them so that you know that they're legal. Interesting. Cool. You know, Misha B's character, you know, went to find the docking, wanted some information on the ship, and her cousin was in the docking authority. So I got to establish some things about the family and the family vibe and the family relationship, which I think is going to be really important later, in a fun way. Because she is heir to a planetary duchy, which is neat. I think Jeremiah got the short end of the stick. He was out talking, and he was the first one to go. And I feel like I gave him the least interesting, imaginative. I feel like I gave him the least tasty treats, right? I just didn't give him a lot of good sci-fi gristle to chew on. And that's a problem. That's a situation where I want to go back. And so that's one reason why I might not want to say, hey, let's speed it up and zip through this information so we can get to the interesting stuff. Because establishing those facts can be important. Okay. Does that mean I can't ever just zip through it? No, you can zip through it. You can zip through it. You could still zip through it. And you can zip through it and still establish those facts. But they might not feel as lived in, right? If you describe the shoes or you wear the shoes, I want them to wear the shoes sometimes, rather than just describe the shoes. So one option is I can start to cross things over really early and fast, right? Jeremiah's merchant goes out to ask some questions. He sees Misha B's character, the heir to the planetary duchy, walk into an office, but someone's following her. So now I've brought him in. And then based on how things go, maybe I bring Jay's character Vaughn in, based on how those conflicts go. So you could see I'm starting to crisscross, right? And it doesn't have to be that obvious. It could be that I play Jeremiah's character and then, you know, maybe he fails that role. So I have somebody run back to the pirates and Vaughn sees someone come back and say, some merchant's asking around about you guys, right? And then suddenly we see one character go from one scene into another. So we can start to criss and cross things up and show that what you do in one scene is going to have an effect on the other. Of course, players know that, but I can start to do it really aggressively. I can really go after it and show the players, hey, I'm trying to bring you all back. And I can even, you know what? I can even say that because I've said things like that at cons. I've said to players, hey, you're all in different parts of the world. Lean into getting back together. Lean into getting into each other's scenes. You know, work with me to make that happen. So you can say, hey, you're all going in separate places to do stuff. But like, let's lean into getting back together, like watch what each other is doing so that we can lean towards getting back together in the same scene, because that's where the magic is going to happen. That's where the juice is going to happen. And that's important. The other thing we can do is say, hey, I don't want to do this. We can break it literally and say, let's not all go our separate ways. I feel like we do that a lot. Let's all go together. So who's going with who, right? Who is going with whose job? Maybe the merchant is going to go with the heir, you know, the scout, to talk to the cousin. And then on their way back, the merchant will talk to people on the docks. And then they'll both watch from a distance while Vaughn does his thing, right? Like maybe we just draw everyone together. That is another option. And it's not a bad one. And I think the seeing patterns that seeing things that you do often in play is not a bad thing. It doesn't mean I'm boring. It doesn't mean I'm, you know, lazy or doing a bad job. I'm not upset that I've noticed these patterns, but I want to notice them. I want to know that they're there. If I'm going to do something in my creative endeavors, I want to do these things purposefully and with a mind towards getting better at it rather than just, well, yeah, this is what I do. I don't see any other way to do it. There are so many other ways to do it. And I am scratching the very surface of it right now. And you know, we haven't even gotten into like the idea of, yeah, you're all back. Who seems like they were in a fight? Who seems like they were, who lost something and who is pleased as punch? We can say, all right, let's roll. Whoever rolls highest gets to choose. You can just do it all as kind of a flashback too. Like we're not even getting really funky with our choices yet. So I guess I just did, but you get the idea. There are lots of other ways to do this. And it's not just, you know, how can I break this up? We can just say, all right, you're all back. Let's talk about it. You can narrate and, you know, do it kind of like a flashback thing. So lots of options. I think lots of interesting things to do with noticing a pattern in one's play. It's good stuff. What are your patterns of play? what's something that you see yourself doing over and over? And you know, do you like it? How do you want to toy with it? How do you want to change it? Or do you never want to change it? I feel like I would notice this more when I would run games, the same game over and over at a con. That was always really interesting to me. So anyway, I would love to hear about your patterns. But time for patterns is over. Let's get to the inspiration goat. IG, what have you got? Good one. Very good one. So I've been reading the Vlad Taltos series by Stephen Brust. I've been listening to the audiobooks. I listened to Zhereg and Yendi, and they do something that we've talked about before on this show, but I'm going to talk about it again because I think it's a really fun technique, and I think it's worth, especially folks who want to, you know, throw lore out there. These books do that in a way, in a very, like, it's a fantasy novel, but it's very fantasy crime noir vibe. I can see the Blades in the Dark. I can see how these books influence Blades in the Dark and in a big way, huge way. Matter of fact, there are parts in the second book where it just feels like there are Blades in the Dark rules literally being written as I read. So that is fun. And they do something that I've done in Blades in the Dark games. And that I think if you're interested in conveying lore, I think it's really important to do. And folks do it. The other example that I have of when this has happened is in True Detective and in Chinatown. And that is conveying history through an adventure. So let me give you some examples. So in True Detective, there is a killer, and the reason why this killer has been able to kill and not be found and do all the things that's been able to do is because of Hurricane Katrina and the way Hurricane Katrina destroyed records all throughout Louisiana. And there are other issues, but I feel like if you were a DM and you were like, man, there was this hurricane that really rocked the world, and I want to illustrate it through play and the way it just kind of destroyed communities and left people, you know, unmoored, then True Detective would have been the way to do that, right? Chinatown is this, you know, noir detective crime story, kind of a classic, and really what it's about is who owns the rights to water in Los Angeles. And so, is it Los Angeles? Man, I hope it's Los Angeles. Boy, am I going to feel like a dick if it's not Los Angeles. Chinatown on IMDb. I'm looking it up. Oh, fuck. This is going to be a blooper. This is not happening. Yeah, it's Los Angeles. Yep, I'm going with this. We're going to keep recording. We're keeping on going. So it's about water rights and corruption in Los Angeles, right? So how can we do this in our games? Let's make up a bit of lore, okay? So let's say we're playing D&D, and back in the day, there was a war between all the magic using classes, right? The warlocks and the wizard and the magic users and the sorcerers, the wizards, the sorcerers, the warlocks all did war on each other. And we want to have a, you know, we want to illustrate, we want the players to learn about that. And the way we want the players to learn about that is to have an adventure that concerns the war. The war is long over. It's in the past. We want it to matter now. Cool. So I might think about the fact that maybe the wizards got together and they killed a warlock patron. right? That was one of the first big, that was a big casualty of the war. That was a turning point of the war when the wizards killed this patron. And so a bunch of warlocks were suddenly without spells, without magical power, because their patron had died. Interesting. Maybe the reverberations were more intense than that. Maybe they just weren't without spells. Maybe they died, right? And maybe they became a very particular type of undead. Yeah. That's it. That's the adventure, right? So we are looting the tomb of this patron who was killed during the magic use wars or the arcane wars. And all of the warlocks who followed that patron all turned into wraiths. And we would look at the magic, you know, the monster manual for wraiths, and we would tinker with it a little bit. So suddenly there was this war in the past. Now it matters. Now we need to know more about it. Now we need to know how did the wizard, you know, the players might get more interested because it has to do with today a bit more, right? What happened? Why, you know, what happened to like, and maybe one of the wizards, you know, if one of the characters is a wizard or a warlock, then we're really into it, right? If you got a character who's a warlock, suddenly his teacher, the person who taught them magic, their mentor, is like, oh yeah, I lost friends when that patron was killed. I had switched over. I used to get my power from that patron, and I switched over during the war because I thought they were being irresponsible. And a couple of my friends became wraiths when that patron died because of those damned wizards, right? There's still some gusto to that. And that's the kind of thing you want to do. That's the kind of thing I want to do to make lore relevant, is tie it directly to the adventure, right? And that is how Stephen Brust makes the world lore relevant in these books. They're fun. They're about 200 pages each, so it's a quick read. It takes me about a week of back and forth to work to get through a book. So it moves fast. And what he very often does is establishes some bit of world lore, of which there's a decent amount. It's a complicated world and a cool world. And then ties that directly into what's happening to Vlad Taltosh and directly into this weird fantasy crime story. So, yeah, I want to think about tying lore directly into the adventure so that it matters now, right? And the way you don't want to make lore irrelevant, you know, if players aren't paying attention to lore, it's usually the 100,000 years ago, there was a great god of evil and they did evil stuff. But they got imprisoned because in my fantasy world, prisons work and they just do just fine. But the prison is breaking down because none are paying attention to it anymore. And so what I'm actually teaching you is that we need to pay more attention to prisons or else evil will unleash on the world. Oh, I hate everything about that story. I don't like that. I don't like it. Sorry to be negative. But it also doesn't have anything to do with what's happening now, right? I want more immediate character history. Right? There was a great king. The king died and became an undead, you know, death knight. And the great heroes came and put that king down. Okay. All right. How can we tie that to what's happening now, today, to tomorrow, to your characters right this second? Cool. So we've got this death knight king, right? Was the king promised to be betrothed to anybody? Who? What happened to them? That's interesting. You know, what is the, how does their family deal with betrothal now? Do they have feelings about it? Do they not force betrothal on anybody anymore? Oh, that's interesting. It's a neat little tidbit. We can sidebar that. What happened to the king's guard? What happened to all the people who had sworn to protect the king? Did they all become monsters? Right? What happened to the king's heirs? What happened to, you know, we can just go and pick each part of a monarch's existence until we find something that that really links up and really says something about the world right now and the world then, and link them together, right? Why did the king become a death knight? How did that happen? You know, that could be the adventure right there. Hey, you know, the castle has been left unattended. That capital city is a ruin. We don't have monarchs anymore because, you know, we have republics because we saw what happens when one monarch turns into a monster. That's cool. I'm digging that. So let's find out, like, why do people become monsters? How did that happen? And why are you worried? Because there is someone threatening, you know, within the republic who is threatening to become emperor, who is threatening to disband the Senate. We want to make sure they don't be, you know, on one hand, we want to put them down and we want to preserve the republic. But we also want to make sure that they're not becoming a death knight again, because we've seen signs that they might be. That's interesting. We're getting somewhere with that. It's not quite cooked. It's not as cooked as the Arcane War. But there's something there that I kind of dig. Neat. So that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about lore. I'm thinking about ways to tie it directly into the adventure right now, so that it's not some faraway thing. You know, there was an evil god. There was an evil angel thing named Sauron. It poured all of its malice and all of its power into a ring. And your uncle has that ring, right? That's a pretty good example of it, but there is a lot of other lore in Tolkien. So, interesting stuff. How do you tie lore into your games? How do you bring it out and make it relevant? I think something we'll talk about, I think, in the next show is how character creation is part of play. And it's something that I've always kind of thought, and playing Classic Traveler, it's making me think it even more so. So I would love to hear about how you make the lore relevant in your games. It's something I talk about a lot, think about a lot. If you've been listening to the show, you've heard me talk about it a bit. And I think it's important. I think it's really fun. Cool. Looking forward to hearing from you. Let's outro. Thank you so much for listening to Daydreaming About Dragons. If you would like to support the show, you can go buy some merch. You can actually support the show and actually pledge money for every time, once a month or however you want to do it. I appreciate it. You can also leave a review. This is maybe one of the best ways to do it. Not everybody has money. If the idea of spending money right now makes you flinch, I get it. But if you could leave a review on the podcast app of your choice, most people are using iTunes or Spotify right now. That would mean the world to me. I think I'm at like 24 or 25 reviews on iTunes. I would love to get up to 30 or 40. So I would love to get a review. And if you would like to contact me, my email is judd.karlman@gmail.com. I'll say that again because I know you just rushed to go get your pen. My email is judd.karlman@gmail.com. I've got my links. in the show notes. You can contact me in any number of different social media platforms, Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky. I'm on all three of those and I'm enjoying them. So drop me a line. Let me know how you drop lore in your games. Let me know what kind of patterns you notice with your gaming and how you change it up and keep it fresh. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Talk to you soon.